This is Mountain Money. Our first guest this morning is Jane Mosbacher-Morris. She's the founder and CEO of To The Market. It's a tech-enabled company that connects ethical suppliers with brands, retailers, and corporations around the world. She's also the author of the upcoming Penguin Random House book, Buy the Change You Want to See. Use your purchasing power to make the world a better place. What a great time to have this discussion. Jane Mosbacher-Morris, she joins us on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us today. Where are you calling in from?
I am calling in from, I'm sorry to say, sunny and warm Atlanta, Georgia.
Well, it's 8 degrees here, Jane. How warm is it there?
You know, it's actually in the 50s. Oh. So it's pretty warm for this time of year.
Yeah, but the skiing's not so good out there.
The skiing is not so good. So you definitely have that on Atlanta.
Jane, before we get to talking about your book, I wanted to ask you about To The Market. Since a lot of people are holiday shopping right now, I wanted them to know about your website, and it's a great retail site.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes, it is definitely shopping season. Hanukkah has kicked off, and Christmas will be here before we know it. And tothemarket.com, which is a direct-to-consumer site, allows for shoppers to buy products that are made in an ethical manner and help support causes around the world. So everything from at-risk mothers here in the United States to human trafficking survivors in places like India. And the website includes things like candles and blankets and just wonderful gifts that give back all year round, but especially during this time of year, it's a great place to give meaningful gifts.
When did you start the website?
The website had its first year in 2015, and we have grown pretty significantly from there. So we have our direct-to-consumer site at tothemarket.com, but most of the business is actually focused on working with other businesses, meaning we partner with retailers and brands to help actually do production for them in an ethical way.
Where are most of your retailers that you work with?
So we work with everybody from Target to Bloomingdale's to Dillard's, to really, you know, price accessible mass retailers that are really moving towards wanting to source and manufacture products in a more ethical way. So really looking at how are we creating products that better respect the planet and also better respect people, really the makers behind the product.
So, Jane, give us a little bit of history, if you would, as far as the movement towards wanting to buy products that help other communities, that are sustainable, that help make the world a better place. I think a lot of us first saw this movement starting in coffee shops where we were buying fair trade coffee. But give us a little bit of history. Where did this start? And is there, it seems to me, there's a groundswell of increased interest in this area.
Well, you're so right. The movement towards better understanding who made our products and how they are made really started, you know, mostly with coffee. And, you know, organizations throughout the coffee industry really give a lot of credit to Starbucks for making it popular for us to really look at who is making our products and how they are being made. But outside of coffee, other food and beverage companies have made it much, much more of a focus for them to do things like farm-to-table or organic and telling more of a story behind, you know, who is actually creating this product, how are we treating the animals or the soil. And that's really, I think, led the way for other industries like the fashion industry, which is the industry certainly that I work in, to begin to ask these questions. Now, it's a little bit tougher in other industries outside of food and beverage because coffee and chocolate, for example, which are both doing an amazing job in helping tell the story of supply chain transparency, other industries like fashion are not commodity industries, meaning it's much harder to have consistency and the transparency in your supply chain. And so I would say fashion is maybe 5 to 10 years behind coffee, chocolate, other industries, but it's certainly catching up. And certainly millennials and Gen Z especially are saying to big companies, how are you making this product in a way that respects the environment, and respect people to a point that you're able to sell it for something like $5. What has to happen for me as a consumer to be able to buy this product for only $5? And as those questions are being asked, more and more big businesses are saying, we have to change the way that we are sourcing and manufacturing fashion products. Nobody should have to die for fashion.
Wow, no kidding. I'm sure a lot of people, Jane, don't think about it when they go to that large clother discount store and they are excited because they found the winter sweater for $14.99. They're probably not thinking about where that sweater was made. How can we become more conscious consumers?
You know, it's really something that happily is becoming easier and easier. And there are a number of companies that are beginning to do a much better job of talking on their website about their supply chain. And when I say their supply chain, that's literally just sort of the technical term for who is making their product and where is it being made and how is it being made. And as consumers, we can be our own Sherlock Holmes and really just go to their website, start there, and begin to research and see what big businesses say about where they're making their products and how they're being made. Almost all companies who are doing a significant amount of business in the United States actually have to say on their website what they are doing to fight labor exploitation in their supply chain. And that's a reflection of actually a piece of legislation that came out of California that requires companies to put on their website what they're doing to fight labor exploitation if they're doing over $100 million in sales in the United States. And so many, many companies are now really starting to tell a much more robust story about the work that they're doing to make sure that they're using materials that are more environmentally friendly and that they're beginning to treat their workers in a way that I think is much more reflective of respecting the dignity of each human being that's a part of our supply chain.
So Jane, let's talk about some examples. You've got some big name companies on your website. They include MasterCard, Hilton, Macy's, Home Depot, and others. There's a couple names that surprised me, but let's start with Hilton. How is Hilton helping out in this effort?
Hilton is a great example of a business that has a significant global footprint and is really beginning to say, what can we do to better impact the communities in which we're working? So something that's super interesting about the travel industry is that a very small percentage of the money that is spent at an international hotel in a developing country. So let's say I'm staying at a Marriott hotel in Guatemala. Something like less than 5% of the money that is spent in that hotel actually circulates in the local economy, which is a shame because it's really an opportunity given the opportunity for the country to have access to more development and to more resources. And so Hilton has made a commitment to doing much more local sourcing, meaning saying, okay, we have to buy things like soap and coffee and bed sheets for our hotels. Why don't we look at buying them locally? Which sounds really simple, but is actually pretty significant of a shift to begin to source locally, because this amount of money, these procurement dollars, can be, really significant in the local economy. So Hilton has a program called Travel with Purpose. And under this umbrella is sort of very basic ideas like not washing your sheets every day or not washing your towels every day, which, as it turns out, has a very positive impact on the environment. But also bigger things like how do we literally make sure that as much product as possible that sits within our hotels in these countries is actually sourced from local makers, so we're creating as many jobs as possible on the ground.
So, Jane, let me get you to talk about one other example quickly. Another name that surprised me, and it makes sense what Hilton's role is in this is, and I suspect I'm just not thinking about MasterCard the right way. How is MasterCard participating in this?
MasterCard is amazing. They are doing some really exciting work on focusing on financial inclusiveness. And what that means is there is a huge population across the globe that previously has been perceived as unbankable, meaning that they didn't have access to credit. And without access to credit, you often don't have the opportunity to have access to creating a credit card or even getting a mortgage. So all of the sort of elements of that we may take for granted here in the United States, the opportunities to potentially rent or own a home eventually, the opportunity to potentially get a loan to go to school, those are not necessarily available to other people around the world because they have been deemed, quote, unbankable. And what MasterCard is doing is they are really focusing on making more financial inclusiveness for people who were traditionally deemed unbankable. And the way that they're doing this is really looking at mobile technology. So people having access to applications on their phone, for example, that allow them to receive payments or pay others, which, again, sounds very simple to us. But for many people around the world, this is the first time they've ever had the opportunity, to have money sit in a place that's not sort of hidden under, the mat that they sleep on. And so MasterCard, in support of their work in financial inclusiveness, has actually started doing similar to what Hilton is doing, sourcing products locally from communities that they're already doing financial work in. So if they are, running a program, let's say, in Kenya to make financial literacy and accessibility, increase financial accessibility, they're also then looking at, okay, how can we actually source more of the MasterCard-branded products from this community? So we're having an even bigger impact from an economic standpoint.
Great example, Jane. Let's move ahead to your book, Buy the Change You Want to See, Using Your Purchase Power to Make the World a Better Place. And we have not seen the book because it's not out yet, but there's a little press release we read, and there is an exciting tidbit that I'm hoping you can give us a sneak peek on. It says, you make us better informed consumers and tell inspiring stories about how victims of human trafficking and natural disasters have been empowered by economic opportunity. Wow, when you talk about a vulnerable population, those are two of them.
Absolutely. And I think what's super exciting about the book is that it helps outline ways that every single one of us, at every socioeconomic level, has the ability to positively impact other people and our planet. And I describe this purchasing power as an untapped superpower, because we often forget how much money we spend as Americans on things like coffee, groceries, gifts. And, one of the things that's fascinating to me is we, as American families, we spend about $57,000 a year per family. And half of that goes towards things like insurance and pensions and healthcare and housing. But that means about the other half, about $30,000, does go on non-necessities, including food, transportation, gifts, chocolate, coffee, et cetera. And so the book really outlines a number of categories that almost all of us spend money on, including coffee, including chocolate, including gifts, and talks about ways that as we are making those purchasing decisions, that we can simply tweak those decisions to engage with businesses that are supporting communities that we believe in. And that can be, as significant as, buying gifts that are made by human trafficking survivors, on the other spectrum, looking at products that are made in a zero waste way, meaning it's not creating additional waste in the production process. So everything, we talk about everything from, car companies that are really on the edge of environmental sustainability, all the way to things like, the things that we're buying for Christmas and Hanukkah, gifts that give back that are made by very vulnerable communities around the world, who feel every single purchase that we make.
And you also say, in addition to the coffee and the chocolate, you're going to give examples of mass-produced jeans and shoes made in factories where workers are guaranteed decent working conditions. Can you give us some examples of some of those vulnerable populations, something specific that we'll see in your book?
Absolutely. So one of the big takeaways from the book, as it relates to mass-produced apparel and shoes, is that mass production isn't necessarily bad, meaning that just because a product is made in a factory and it's made by a big corporation doesn't mean that it is made unethically. Just as small artisan cooperatives, let's say, are not necessarily run ethically. So you can have good and bad on either side of the spectrum. I have the pleasure of being involved in a company called VF Corporation. And VF Corporation owns Wrangler and Timberland and Vans and North Face. So a lot of brands that I'm guessing a lot of folks in Park City are using, probably especially North Face. But I've had the pleasure of visiting many of their factories as part of my my role as an advisor on responsible sourcing. And it's been a really incredible learning experience for me to see ethical manufacturing at scale. And what I saw was an example of a huge company. So VF Corporation, who owns all of these brands, is something like a $12 billion company. And yet I saw at mass scale what it looks like to respect your workers, to have facilities that have, you know, really top-of-the-line safety, great working conditions. And so, this chapter on ethical manufacturing at scale, we talk about a number of companies that I think are doing a really great job of improving their supply chain and making it more accessible for us to buy, you know, a sweater for $15.
You know, let's talk about that, the ethical manufacturing at scale. You know, there's only a handful of companies that come to mind when I heard you say that, and of course Apple being the top amongst those, at least in my mind. And you know, I use an iPhone and I feel good about it because Apple does a good job of explaining, you know, how they're concerned with the recyclability of the phone, how they're concerned with where the minerals and the components come from and how those people are treated. And they talk very openly about that. And so I see Apple as being kind of down that journey already, but I suspect most of the stuff I buy, the companies haven't even begun that journey yet. What do you think it is that makes it where Apple's at least a couple years, if not a decade or two, ahead of many manufacturers on that ethical manufacturing at scale? And what do other manufacturers need to do to get there and maybe surpass companies like Apple?
Well, I think what is a really important part of this process is that I fundamentally believe that markets have to be behind this type of change, meaning that regulation certainly plays a role, but that ultimately it has to be market-driven for it to be sustainable and for a company to fully pursue it in earnest. And I think what Apple has wisely identified is the fact that if they are to remain relevant to millennials and Gen Z, that they have to be forward-leaning on making their supply chain as transparent as possible. Otherwise, they will lose the support of the next generation. And so my message to other businesses who are beginning to say, well, what should we do? And how does this apply to us? Because perhaps we are more focused on price than we are around ethical production. My message to these businesses would be, if you want to remain relevant to the next generation, you must begin to look at how you are producing your products in a way that you can feel good about and that the next generation will feel good about. Because millennials and Gen Z are focused on what I say is three things: sustainability, transparency, and authenticity. And if companies are not focused on those three things, I fundamentally believe they will lose support of the next generation.
Jane, how did a corporation like VF get there? Were they always socially conscious, or did they make a transition somewhere along the line?
I think they were always very aggressive in trying to make their supply chain best in class. They are operationally, they are known for having, you know, being extremely operationally efficient and having sort of best in class operations for a retailer. What they will publicly say is that after the Rana Plaza disaster, which was a building in Bangladesh that sadly collapsed and killed a number of people, VF was not present in that building. They did not have any operations in that building. But it was an accelerant for them to say, again, nobody should ever have to die for fashion. And so it really helped to accelerate the work that they are doing and double down on the commitment that they are doing to make sure that their supply chain not only operationally is best in class, but from a responsible sourcing standpoint is best in class. And I'm really proud to see that work happening on the ground with them.
Yeah, you know, it's a shame that it takes disasters like that to bring about change. My undergrad's in chemical engineering, so many, many years ago, I worked for a Fortune 500 chemical company. And there was a horrible accident, not with the company that I was involved in, but in a town in India where a chemical manufacturer unfortunately released a chemical and it killed the whole town. And it really brought about a lot of change. And the company I was working for was kind of on the forefront of safety and preventing stuff like this. But it's challenging in these commodity businesses because the margins are so low. And so I want to take you back to your quote on sustainability, transparency, and authenticity. And I want to talk about transparency because it's easy to be transparent when you've got a great story to tell and it's part of your PR message. It's harder to be transparent when you're on the first couple steps of the journey and you have a lot of things you want to change. What's your advice to companies about transparency in the early days of them improving and going towards this?
Well, I mean, it's complicated. It's definitely complicated when you have a desire to be transparent, but that the story potentially you would be telling is not a great one. And I think especially for public companies, that's something that they have to be wary of, is how are they going to release information and tell a story about the work that they're doing without completely freaking out their investors. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think the approaches for private and public tend to be quite different. That said, I do think that beginning to tell the positive stories as you begin the work and acknowledging that much more work needs to be done is an important step. And I've seen this a lot in the chocolate industry, where the corporate social responsibility reports have said, you know, we have begun to engage X population in the Ivory Coast, for example, which is where a tremendous amount of coffee farming is done. I'm sorry, where chocolate farming is done. And, you know, they've told the stories of the work that they're doing on the ground, while at the same time acknowledging the fact that there are significant challenges related to, let's say, child labor or subsistence farming or other just labor-related constraints that they continue to work through. So I think my advice would be to acknowledge the work that you've begun and to also acknowledge the challenges that you continue to face in helping to improve your supply chain.
Jane, we're all so busy and we all want to do the right thing, but we want to do it quickly. And if you want to go to a good business, you check out the BBB. If you want to give your money to a nonprofit, you go to a place like GuideStar.org. Where can we go? Is there one-stop shopping to check out a business or check out a store to see if there's a rating? Does anyone do that?
You know, it's tough because there really isn't a universal rating for stores. There are a couple of things that I think are helpful. One is you can actually, there's something called a benefit corporation, which is both a certification and a legal incorporation status. That has very high standards for businesses. And if you go to, if you Google benefit corporation, and examples of benefit corporations include like Patagonia and Ben & Jerry's, you can find a list of businesses who have been certified as benefit corporations. And that means that they've met very high and aggressive environmental and social standards. So that would be the easiest one-stop shop that I can think of. But I would encourage people, because I don't think it necessarily requires massive shifts in their normal behavior, I would encourage all of us to just decide we're going to do one thing to make our consumerism a little bit more responsible. And that could be deciding to spend, let's say, 10% of the money that you spend for holidays on gifts that you think were produced responsibly, or decide that you're going to buy from the local grocery store that, you know, is mom and pop owned maybe once a month. It's just micro changes that can really positively you know, create a monopoly effect where it really, a domino effect rather, where it can have a significant impact on, you know, on the future of people and, again, on the planet.
Well, Jane, we thank you for joining us. Our guest this morning has been Jane Mosbacher Morris. She is the founder and CEO of ToTheMarket.com. She is also the author of a soon-to-be-released book with the title Buy the Change You Want to See, Use Your Purchasing Power to Make the World a Better Place. Jane, thank you so much for joining us this morning.